the lid's off the cookie jar.
Hi, I'm Christine Bruce, broadcasting on Wet'suwet'en territory through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Welcome back to what's turned into a three-part conversation focused on the BC Association of Farmers Markets Benefit Study, for which I was the Northern Research Associate. Dr. Dave Connell, a UNBC professor and the mastermind behind this study, has been my guest the past 2 weeks, helping us understand the structure and reasoning that makes this study so invaluable. At the tail end of last week's episode, I introduced Kate Poirier, another invaluable element to this project. Kate was our project coordinator for the study. Kate kept all the plates spinning so very smoothly, so we research associates could just set up a tent at each market and just get on with the business of surveying market goers. This week, Kate continues to give context to how we as surveyors and admin staff perceive these questions and the impact they had on market goers. Last week, Kate and I went into the DOT survey again. Now, with no preliminary here, we'll leap back into our conversation about how you interpret the yellow tourist shopper dots and what we're discovering about our province as a result. The yellow dots are a great springboard to illustrate the difference between the main objective of these surveys, the economic benefit that a farmer's market has on a community, and what else we're seeing. That's, as Kate puts it, snowballed in with all that objective.
I'm looking at the Haida Gwaii data, and I have to say, I think it reestablishes what I was saying, that they do have a high proportion of visitors who are first-year visitors, but 90% were tourists.
Yeah.
90% of the first-year visitors were tourists. So if you just look at the locals, they had been shopping every year. No, it's just interesting.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, but there also... One of the comments I made in the preliminary report for Haida Gwaii was, it was interesting to me to watch people answer the questions, because sometimes people answer it one way with one intention, and sometimes they'll answer it another way with a totally different intention, and it's the same question, but they don't seem to understand it the same way. Like, you can live there for 2 or 3 months and consider yourself a local, but
yeah.
The next person doesn't consider themselves a local. They're from Seattle, so they're not a local. They just happen to be living there for 2 or 3 months, right? So there would be, like, when I look at these statistics, I think, yeah, not everybody answered that question the same way. So,
yeah, you see that? Haida Gwaii, that makes sense. And I saw that a lot on the Gulf Islands as well, because a lot of people have summer homes there, and they would say, I'm a local, I live in Vancouver. But I spend my summer here. And I said, well, your main home is in Vancouver there. Like, you're a tourist to this island, right?
Yeah.
No, and the data, it's really interesting because it tells you all these migration patterns about people. That's a great one there. I was on Gabriel Island. That was happening. And there's a lot of people with summer homes. And they said, well, but I've been coming to this market for 8 years. Can I be a local? And where's your main home? They're like, in Vancouver. I was like, okay, well. That's it. Like, that's your main home. So you would see all these tourist dots on the survey question. That would be 5-year shopper, 10-year shopper, but they're a tourist. So they've been coming back and coming back.
Yeah.
And you can just learn so much about the entire region by looking at that data.
Yeah, you're right. I find that a fascinating aspect of doing these surveys for farmers markets, is that we saw so many social statistics that, you know, we understand our province so much better having done this. I mean, there are so many things that we're collecting that are not just economic benefits.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, there was a fifth question that we offered to each market, right? So there were the four questions that were standard across the entire province. And then we would say to the market, do you have a fifth question that you'd like to know something about your market? So I would love to hear what some of those questions were across the province. Mine in the north, the typical one was, what was your primary reason for visiting the farmer's market? Which I've already alluded to. But you must have seen lots of different variations on the fifth question.
I did, but most of the time, it was one of maybe 3 or 4 questions that the market managers were all sort of interested in similar topics, which makes sense. So it was that one that you just mentioned, what is your primary reason for coming today? Another very common one was, where are you from? to understand if the local neighborhood is participating in the market, if tourists are coming. It lets you know how you're marketing, if it's successful or not, if your name is getting out there. Those are the two biggest fifth magic question for the markets. What did you learn from that question up in the northern region?
You know, it depended on where we were. Like, as I said, on Haida Gwaii, the primary reason for coming was often indigenous crafts, because they're there as a tourist, right? So frequently people would say, oh no, it was the crafts. If it was a local, we often saw to support local or to support our vendors or to get quality food. And I also alluded to this one. If there was family input from the children, it invariably went to the baking. And I could hear the parents sigh. They would say to me, well, if it had been me, I'd have said to support local, but little Johnny wants to say the baking.
Oh, that is so true, though, because my market has a new candy vendor. And the weekends that I don't feel like going to the market, I'm now dragged every single Sunday down there to go visit this new candy vendor. So bringing in this one business, I end up spending 2 hours there every time. Wow. Because of it. The children have such an influence on the parents' buying and, you know, social behavior. So that information is so valuable to these markets. And then some of these markets, they are asking, where are you coming from? And it was only the immediate neighborhood that was shopping there. There weren't international tourists or anything visiting. So it was telling a story. And then I asked that question at our small town market here on Vancouver Island. And it turned out that about a third of our customers were tourists. And those tourists were coming from all over the world and all over Canada.
Wow.
So, I mean, this village has about 2,000 people. It's outside of a big city, but I would never have guessed that we could draw thousands of people from all across the country and all across the world to visit the small town market. And that was really fascinating.
It is fascinating. And, you know, it's astonishing to me how many times I've made an assumption about who comes to my local market and why they come to my local market. And then I see these statistics and I think, really? I didn't expect that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Like, we occasionally would get people from out of town. Like, Smithers is a drive through, right? Like, there's one highway that comes up this side of the mountains, and the only way to get to Rupert or to Haida Gwaii or to the Yukon or to Alaska is on this highway, and we're right on the highway. So, of course, we're going to get tourists. And you ask them where they're from, and there's this thing in my head that says, oh, yeah, tourists, they're from away. But when they tell me where from away, like from Scotland, I think, really? Well, why am I so surprised?
Yeah. Yep. I found the exact same thing. And our town is outside of the city of Nanaimo, but you have to drive past the dump, and then it's just this town. There's nothing else there except for this little town. So you drive, you go out into the country, there's the dump, and then there's this little town, and, you know, 3,500 people drive there. it's what possesses everyone. And how did they hear about it? How did these international tourists hear about it? How did these, you know, out of province tourists hear about it? And there's so many of them, so many. The numbers are incredible.
Yeah, I agree. That's the thing. How do they find out about it? But they do. You know, I mean, I can see how they found out about our market because we're right on the highway. You see the signs. But there are a lot of places that I visited this summer that are not right on the highway, or they're close to the highway, but they're not all that accessible. You have to know when to turn off. And usually when I'm in the car, my mind is on getting to from A to B. And so I'm not easily distracted by that. So if I see a farmer's market, I may or may not stop. So I'm always, you know, you say you have to go by the dump. Oh, why would I do that? But they do it.
Absolutely.
Hey, what do you think Dave's generally using these stats to uncover? Like, when we put in the preliminary report or our findings, what do they demonstrate about a community? And I mean overall for the province. I'm not saying, you know, what are we demonstrating about one particular town or city? But, and if I ask Dave this question, he'll say, well, economic benefits. But I think there's more to it than that. We're uncovering a lot more with these statistics than just whether a farmer's market has an economic benefit to a community. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, what is the main objective of this study? And then what else, you know, gets kind of snowballed, discovered once you start looking at all the layers, because there's so much more that comes out. So I think the main objective is just to look at the economic activity in BC and be able to say, hey, this is our piece of the pie that we are contributing to this province. And with this being the third time the studies happen, we can also track that growth. This is how much money was coming in because of our markets, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and this is the growth now. I'm really interested to see that number. It's coming out very soon. We saw growth between 2006 and 2012. The estimated economic benefit went from 69 million up to 170 million.
Okay, and wait, let me just back up for a minute. How many, let's throw some numbers out here. How many farmers markets did we include in the study in those 2 years? And how many farmers markets did we include? We had 70 this year. Out of how many? How many farmers markets are there in BC altogether?
So right now there's just over 145 official farmers markets in BC.
So we have about half of them.
Yeah. And that, so that data will be extrapolated to all of the markets,
right?
Based on, you know, all the things, the vendor size and the customer counts and everything like that. So yeah, for this year, there's just over 145. When the study, the last round of the study happened in 2012, there were approximately 159 farmers markets. So there'd be slightly less, but almost the same for this year. If I had to guess, some of the smaller markets maybe didn't make it through COVID. I know that happened in, here in Nanaimo, but really a strong industry, obviously. And then we'll also be able to see the track the growth of people visiting, the customer numbers. Who is shopping at farmers markets now? How many people are shopping at farmers markets now? Is it becoming more common? Are people shopping there more frequently? Those are the types of things we'll be able to see with the final provincial report.
Okay. And just the numbers, the growth in numbers, how many we had, what was it the first year? 25 were involved the first year and 35, I think, in 2012. And so we had 70 this year. And that to me is an indicator in itself, how many people want to be involved in these surveys and they want to know what the economic impact is on their community.
Yeah, absolutely. In 2006, the team visited 28 farmers markets, and that was the first time the study happened. It was an enormous project. Really interesting data came out of it. So it went from 28, and then in 2012, it went up to 33 farmers markets.
Okay.
28 markets in the first one, 33 in the second, and now in the third study, we did 70 farmers markets. So we more than doubled the participation this year.
And I would like to insert that there were several times while I was doing the markets in the north that people would come to me and say, why isn't my market? I mean, this is how we got Gabrielle Island, right? A friend of mine happens to be the market manager there. And she contacted me on Facebook and said, when are you coming to my market? And I said, I don't see your name on the list. You need to contact them right now and get on that list. And that wasn't an infrequent thing. People want to be involved. They want to find out more about their market and what their impact is in their community and whether their community is supportive of them. And I think that in itself is a wonderful thing. If that's the one thing that we learned with this survey, that's a good thing to know about BC.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I've discovered through talking with you over the course of the summer that you enjoy playing with the data to see what else it can tell us. What did you discover, for instance, from graphing the yellow dots? We've already alluded to it, but I love that you were graphing the yellow dots to see what was happening across the province. I mean, that's not something that you were tasked with doing, right? That's because that's something that fascinates you.
No, that's more for fun and out of interest. I do oversee a large farmers market on Vancouver Island. I have a new on-site manager this year in my place while I worked on the study, but I still oversee the operations. And so seeing the yellow dots represented tourists and the rest of the colors were local people who answered the questions. And so from looking at the tourist data, they always pretty much 100% said that they were coming for the artist vendors and to purchase art related products, whereas locals were coming for local produce and the farm foods. And the split between that was extreme. It was black and white, right? The answers. So when you looked at the question and you kind of averaged the answers without separating between tourists and locals, you would see equal amount of people coming for farm foods and bakery and arts. But it wasn't, they weren't average in amounts in any respect. It was the tourists were coming for art supplies and locals were coming for farm food. And as a market organizer, that's really important to me because we have a very limited budget for advertising. So if I'm going to be spending money on maybe a local magazine advertisement that goes out to my community and only my small town community is going to see it, and it has a couple of photos on that, you know, and maybe it's costing me 25% of my advertising budget. Well, I need to make sure that I'm taking pictures of farm food because locals are reading that. And if I want to appeal to them, then I need to make sure that I'm selling the picture, the advertising for things that they actually want to come purchase. And then if I was going to spend the rest of my budget on a BC Ferries advertisement where the tourists are filling all the seats, I need to know that those tourists are looking to buy art supplies and meet artists and make sure that my photography on those ads have pottery, have hand-knitted goods, and, you know, original local creations that those tourists are looking for so that I can draw them in and bring them in to spend their money here at our market with our artists.
Yeah, what a great place to discover art at a farmer's market. But, you know, your brain doesn't automatically go there, does it? So you're right.
No.
You advertise to the tourist that this is what you can get here.
Yes. If you know what market you're appealing to, you can use different methods to appeal to them. And that's really important. I actually, one of the market reports taught me something else. They had a small midweek market that was all farmers. And that's really great. I've seen that in multiple communities now because it keeps the farmers going and it keeps local produce all week long on families' plates, right? But what we saw was that tourists were spending close to $0. It was the lowest tourist spending I had seen in any market in the province. And tourists were spending a really high amount at external local businesses in the community, like almost higher than I had seen anywhere else. So what happened is they came to the market and they're looking for arts products. There was nothing to purchase for them. There was only food. And so they had money to burn. They had spending money for souvenirs, for memories to purchase, and they couldn't find anything to spend it on. So they were spending a lot of money later that day in the community, or they just weren't spending any money in the community whatsoever. So that was interesting. It jumped off the page, the numbers. They were very stark numbers. But what we could learn from that is you don't need to make that Wednesday farmers market complicated. Maybe just get some handmade market merchandise, you know, like a hand-printed keychain, and use that as a fundraiser, because I'm sure your farmers market is not for profit and you have very little operating funding as it is. So you have all these tourists coming. They've got money in their pocket that's burning a hole in their pocket. Offer them that small gift of a memory of visiting that place, and they want to, they want it, right?
Good idea. Yeah. I saw it in Massett, you know, they seem to have captured that market really well because they had a midweek market. They had it even during the off season a couple of times, like a Christmas market, where it was a lot less produce and a lot more tourism, but they knew that they had a lot of tourists coming in. And so they would have a mug stall. I also saw that at Tolel. They had a mug stall. They had t-shirts for sale. They had hats, you know. They also had the indigenous crafts, that artwork and feathers and jewelry and wonderful products. That, of course, this is what the tourists are looking for, but you're right. They're also happy to get some little token that they happen to be on Haida Gwaii or on Gabriola or Nanaimo, like all the typical tourist spots. That's what they're going there for. And you're right, the farmers market should be taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and some of them, they're really small and they're food only and they don't have the staff to make it more complicated to organize artists every day, which it, you know, it's great that they're serving their local farms with their market. So that there's little things that they could do that they're losing out on the income opportunity that exists there.
Agreed. But There's nothing like a farmer's market, whether it's on the weekend, whether it's midweek. I'm desperate to go and visit, support my farmer's market, because I'm going to come home with something somebody grew on my behalf, and it's going to taste great and it'll make me feel good. And and the social aspect, you know, I get to visit with people that I miss seeing all week long. I tell you, our Smithers Farmer's Market shut down this week for, you know, we did our last fall market, and we were all really a little teary-eyed about it. I'll see you in the spring.
Yeah.
That the social aspect can't be understated, really.
We have a couple more markets and then we shut down, and we have our second last market is the Halloween market, and a few hundred kids will be coming in costumes all done up to come trick-or-treating, and it's my favorite day of the year.
What fun!
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
I love it. I love it. It warms my heart. It's the best day.
Okay, we've talked about the BC Association of Farmers Markets and Dave Connell's surveys, but now I want to turn to your particular role in all this. You made a comment about what you were doing this summer on our behalf, and I think I'd like to go back to that for a second, because there were things that you learned and things that you did for us that, you know what, I don't always know what you're doing in the background. I just know that you're supporting us, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, when things go smoothly, you don't question it. It's when something goes kaboying that suddenly you're like, wow, what are they doing over there?
That reminds me of at the farmer's market, someone told me, well, the market runs itself now, doesn't it? It was a 40-hour a week job to make it run smoothly, but it was running so smoothly that somebody had the nerve to tell me that, you know, I wasn't really needed anymore because it was running so smoothly. There must not be any obstacles or challenges throughout the week.
Wow.
I know I'm doing my job well, but please don't finish your sentence.
I remember somebody saying once that the sign of a professional who's doing their job is that they make it look easy.
Absolutely.
The problem with that is that everybody thinks that any old fool could do this job then.
Yeah, they don't see all the moving pieces.
So I love that you were doing things like mapping our travel plans and watching ferries and, you know, booking hotels for us. But I like also that you were creating the calendar. I was sort of unaware of that you were creating the calendar. You know, it's somehow you feel like that's just sort of happening on its own. And one of the comments you made in our discussions building up to this conversation was that you were doing that designing based on the presumptive risk of a bad wildfire season. We did have a bad summer, but I feel like we dodged several bullets. Like here in Smithers, while I was at the Skeena Valley Market in Terrace, I got a note from a friend saying there's a forest fire on Tatlow Road, which is, you know, maybe 10, 15 kilometers from where I live. And I remember thinking, am I ever going to see my house or my cat again?
Oh, my God.
You know, the local fire department beat the fire. Like, I don't know how they did that because it was so dry this summer. And I feel like there were several bullets like that we dodged as a province, because it didn't feel like it was as awful as, well, remember Lytton?
Yep. Back at the end of winter or early spring, I basically had this, you know, full map of the province and a staff team ready to go anywhere. And I had to book the entire thing with so many unknowns. And I just thought, okay, let's imagine that it's the summer of 2021 when everything is burning down. Who got it the hardest? Who gets the worst fires throughout the year? Let's get all of those markets finished early, right at the start of June, if possible. By July, early August, there's going to be high fire risk across the entire province, no matter what. If it's a severe year or a normal year, the risk is going to be high by the end of July. That's how it happens. And I felt like a lot of people around me didn't see the high value in that approach, but they also didn't want to say, don't bother doing that in case it was a year like 2021.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to make a mistake and underestimate the potential dangers involved in, you know, sending people across the province on the road in the cars, isolated by themselves, to all these communities. And your team, I mean, your contracts were going to be done at the end of the summer, right? Or the first week of September. So it wasn't that we had office staff that we were just going to send out in a couple months' time to make up for it. we were dead set on a deadline that had to be completed. This is a one-off special project with special grant funding, and the timelines were very strict and they were very finite. And when fires did get really bad, especially I think the last week, end of July, early August, as per usual, most of your team was about 70% through the assessments by that point.
Yeah. We were lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a couple of times we'd get into a team meeting and somebody would say, yeah, I'd had to take a back road because I couldn't get there because the roads were all
yes. Yes. We had a couple of crazy team meetings in the summer. That's right.
Or you'd have to stay an extra night because, you know, the weather. I remember when I was heading off to Haida Gwaii thinking, funny, but this feels like the only place in the province where I'm not going to have to worry about a forest fire. But am I going to be able to get back home after I'm finished my week on Haida Gwaii because the rest of the province is burning? Funny, don't worry about with a job, right? But there we were.
Right. Yeah, that's your office. It's crazy to think of.
Yeah, it's funny to look back on it now that I keep saying that we dodged bullets, but I really think we did, because it could have been so much worse.
We did. I was tracking those wildfire maps every day and I would get pings whenever a new one was happening. And I would constantly be checking, like, no, we're done that city. We're done that city. We're done that city. And we had finished all the hardest hit cities before things ramped up. So we did come in on schedule. And you know what else? Originally, our goal was to do 65 farmers markets.
Right.
Back in May, we were aiming for 65. And by the end of August was when we said, you know what? We're doing 65, but I think we're going to do 70. And that was Chloe and the budget and the scheduling and making all of our goals. And there weren't many cancellations or rescheduling that happened throughout the year.
Well, I think a lot of the kudos should go to you and the team, because that did go more smoothly than it felt like it was going to in May. You know, I think you did a great job and you deserve some credit for that.
Oh, you guys did a great job. You were the ones on the road alone with yourselves for hours and hours. And I know it was quite intense, especially trips like Haida Gwaii, where, you know, when you're talking to 1,500 people in 3 days, your brain feels like it will explode at any second. I think it takes a lot out of anyone.
It was one of those moments where when I headed there, I had this romantic notion of going to Haida Gwaii. And then I'd been there for a couple of days and I thought, yeah, this isn't as much fun as I thought it was going to be.
Work is work. You have these romantic ideas, but you're working. There's so many mental processes happening that you're just exhausted by the end. I can't even imagine. I got to live vicariously through all of you. I would get text messages throughout different research associates' trips, and I would get photos texted to me. I would be deep into my spreadsheets. I haven't talked to a human in 8 days, and then I would get these beautiful pictures from different farmers markets across the province, and it would bring me out of my boring office isolation. And it was really incredible to see what you guys were doing this year.
Yeah, that was the romantic part of it, is that we could look back and say, wow, we did this. This was pretty neat.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, that means that people can get daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture. Different understanding, but a different picture. Different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something, and so on. Well, that's the way. People become human. You know, that's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
If top quality, locally sourced food is important to you, then Smithers is the place to be. In our town, there are many options for finding healthy, local food. Looking for a coffee shop? How about Bugwood Coffee, where friends gather for locally roasted coffee and baked goods at 1206 Main Street? Or Mountain Eagle Books, a used bookstore and cappuccino bar. Mountain Eagle on 3rd Avenue is a great place to lose yourself in a book and a coffee. Want to make it yourself? Visit Nature's Pantry on 1st Avenue. a health food store with an excellent selection of natural foods. And no town is complete without a farmer's market. The BV Farmer's Market offers fresh local produce and meats, craft beers and baked goods, artisan and craftwares, all made, baked, or grown locally. While the market is now closed for the winter, many of the vendors and farmers continue to offer products and services around town. Thank you to our sponsors, Bugwood Coffee, Mountain Eagle Books, Nature's Pantry, and the BV Farmer's Market. Food for body and soul, just like the cookie jar. You've got your hand in the cookie jar on CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Today, that's a really good thing. I'm your host, Christine Bruce. Before the break, Kate Poirier and I were reviewing some of the neat data we collected this summer on behalf of the BC Association of Farmers Markets, looking at it partly from the scientific perspective, but also from the market manager perspective and the math nerd angle. Up next, we'll be discussing the communications viewpoint and how numbers convince people with money so we can keep our local farmers markets running.
Now that many of the farmers markets are winding down and the survey season is complete, your role has changed considerably. What are you doing on behalf of the association now?
Yeah, now I have transitioned into a new role as a communications specialist. So I will be converting that data into presentations and marketing materials. That's actually the entire reason why I took this job or wanted to go for this job back last winter. I want this data available for my personal use to petition my local government for more support, whether that's financial or supporting programs we may develop. And I didn't just want to get this data from an external team or have a presentation handed to me. I wanted to be an expert. I wanted to know every single data point at every single market that was happening in the province. So when I went to the table with my local regional district or the city here, I wanted to know every last detail. I wanted to be the expert to point to ask about farmers markets, to ask about these economic indicators, economic impacts. And now it's the only thing I've basically thought about now for about 9 months. And for me, I'm just starting on the presentations. I've done one small presentation to local government so far, and I've got a few more happening in the coming months. And I want to be the subject expert. I don't want to petition the government and not be able to back up what I'm asking for, if that makes sense.
It does. But I want to clarify this. I think there's an assumption when you're not involved with farmers markets that they kind of run themselves. We've kind of alluded to that a couple of times. It's like you open the umbrella and it's magic, you know? It's not. It's a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of money needed to get this thing to operate every year. And so you're taking the material, the data that I've collected this summer, and you're petitioning governments so that farmers markets can continue. And I think that's really critical for anyone to understand. It's not a question of, oh, look, these pretty dots. It's we're doing something important with this. We're being advocates on behalf of the farmers, the people who are feeding us, to make sure that they can continue to grow our food for us. And they can continue to come together and make sure that it can be distributed to local people who need to eat.
Yeah. And I think there's too many politicians or too many people not involved with markets who just see them as a nice, you know, little adventure for the day. And it's the soft, fuzzy feelings, the thoughts and prayers, have a good time. But that's not what it is at all. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of different businesses across the province who this is their main sales channels. And without the market space available to sell their products, those businesses might not exist. And at the same time, when you're talking about farmers, you're talking about a lot of farmland there's no succession planning for the next generation. The farming families have gotten smaller. This is a problem all across the province. So how do we encourage the next generation of farmers to keep our farmland viable, to keep local food growing or new foods growing if they don't have a space where they can sell those products and meet their customers, which, you know, owning a store is expensive. So these farmers markets, they provide that stepping stone to the customers. And like you said, there's a social connection that happens there that is affordable, it's accessible, it's inclusive, and it's also really flexible. We don't take up a lot of hard space, right? We're popping up and packing in at the end of the day, yep. But we're building these outdoor mega malls of local products, and the skills exchanges that are happening at each day of these markets is absolutely incredible. It's, you know, you could devise an entire university program department around the different skill sets, whether it's the artist or whether it's the different crops and the different growing techniques, the different processing. And we need to get past the idea that this is just a loose, rough get together of a couple of friends having a nice time at the park. This is a serious economic stabilization venture that supports our communities when times are good and times are bad. And we saw that during COVID, our markets were very consistent and kept family businesses going and kept money coming into our communities. And that's just so important. And by taking these numbers and presenting them to government, we can speak at a language that really appeals to policymakers. And that's something that we've been lacking for a long time.
I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing the story that you told me before we started recording, but I would love to hear at least part of that, where one of your local grocery stores was stocking the shelves with stuff that's coming in from somewhere else and saying, buy local. And everyone's saying, yeah, buy local. And you had to remind people that there's nothing local about that. Because, you know, during COVID in Smithers, we had some real distribution problems. And there were a lot of people who couldn't eat because there was nothing on the grocery store shelves. And yet there were people like me who always buy local because I'm buying from my neighbors, my farmers and my meat producers. And I didn't worry too much during COVID because it's a totally different concept of buying local. Do you mind sharing some of that story?
Yeah, I'll be more brief about it. I guess it's the community education that we all continue to try to improve on. And it was somebody in a public social media post that commented, there is someone complaining that the local grocery store did not have local products like they claim to have. And someone had replied saying, who cares? You need to learn how to be more appreciative that there's food on those stands, on those aisles, you know, as if they're not being appreciative enough for what we have. We're so lucky to have this imported food filling our shelves. And I just replied and tried to be really polite and said, no, they're right. It is really important that local food is on the store shelves, because when you purchase local food, you allow those businesses to improve their production processes, which reduces their labor costs, which reduces the cost of their products, reduces their shipping costs. And when you have a big emergency like a pandemic and all of the shipping routes get shut down, then you're not impacted from it, because I'm on Vancouver Island. If our food is coming from the other side of the world on a boat and a train and another boat and a truck, you know, it's easy for that system to get broken. And that's why our shelves were empty. But now if there's a pandemic, my food is coming from down the street. We don't need to rely on all of that. And so we need to, if you like the product and you can afford the product, please purchase the product. Because I guarantee that those businesses, they want to be bigger. Like, they're at their stepping stone and they want to get bigger. And once they get bigger, their prices get better. Their production gets better. Their labels get nicer. They, you know, everything gets stepped up and it gets more reliable and it benefits everyone in your community.
You know, one of the comments that a farmer made to me this summer that I didn't, here's another thing I learned. She was one of our vendors, one of our main vendors in Smithers for a long time. And she said the big complaint that she was always getting was, oh no, this is so much more expensive than the grocery store. And she said, actually, it's not. If you look at the price of organic vegetables in those grocery stores, it's a lot more than we're charging you here.
That's absolutely right. I have actually noticed the complaints going down in the past couple of years as the grocery prices have risen faster than I think our farmers market prices have. And actually in this study, we added one or two extra questions in the long form survey to ask consumers how they perceive the value of the produce at farmers markets versus grocery stores. So we're actually expanding that analysis this year, which is going to be really interesting. I mean, most of our farmers can't afford the organic branding, but most of them use organic practices. So that is a good, I would think a fair comparison.
I think our farmers should be paid better. I know there's going to be people who find that a controversial thing to say, but being an avid farmers market attendee and not having a lot of income myself, I still think the farmers deserve to be paid better. So one of the comments I was surprised to be making all summer was this, and I wonder if you had the same experience. I've been shopping and volunteering and on boards of directors for farmers markets for almost 15 years, and I thought I knew all about markets. But this job has taught me so many things that I didn't know. Were there things that you learned?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always learning something new. One of the things that I think a lot about is how the success of the market may or may not depend on which day of the week it is, because I do hear that a lot from people. I've had people tell me my market's only successful because it's on a Sunday, not because of any efforts made, which is, you know, you just have to kind of smile if they're not open for discussion on the matter. So I was interested in that. And then I found it wasn't true. I was more surprised. I saw markets that were on, you know, Tuesday, Wednesdays, that were just as successful as Saturday and Sunday markets.
I would send you to Vanderhoof because they're on a Thursday and the whole town just shuts down and comes to the market.
There's a lot. Yeah, there are a lot more factors involved in whether tourists and locals are shopping there and how much they're spending. The day of the week is one of the smallest factors that I could find. So I was happily surprised by that, because that just says if your market's struggling, there is room for improvement without, you know, flipping the whole world upside down and changing the market or moving it. And I mentioned, I learned how to target advertising towards tourists versus locals that I had never even considered at all. And now it's a black and white goal for me to separate my advertising between tourists and locals and food versus art. And I did a small presentation on this study to my local government, and I had put it together about 3 days before the presentation. I was a late addition to the meeting, so I was pretty nervous. And I was not only trying to develop a presentation, but I was trying to think of, what do they want to hear? Like, are they interested? They're probably not as interested as me. I'm obsessed. Like, I'm obsessed with farmers markets and economic data. I study economics in my free time for fun, and I've been doing that for about 17 years now. So I'm a total nerd with numbers. So I have to remember that these people are not going to be as excited as me. And I cut out half my presentation to try to keep it brief, because my first rough draft was at least 35 minutes and I only had 10 minutes. So I did it and I was really nervous. I had no idea if they were going to like it. And then at the end, they loved it. They loved it. I hadn't even considered that they might love it. I was just thinking, how bad will it be? But I hadn't considered that it might be good. That hadn't crossed my mind until it happened. And they were excited. They wanted more. They had so many questions. I realized I shouldn't have cut so many slides out, because the questions they were asking, I was like, oh, I actually did prepare that too. I didn't realize just how passionate politicians and counselors and planners could be. Once you have the numbers there, that is the right language that they need to receive. And it actually matters to their positions. It's something they can use. It's the right tool, right? It's the right tool to be giving to a government representative. And so I hadn't considered that until I was in that seat doing the presentation. They wanted follow-up presentations and they wanted follow-up data. And they were happy that I'd come to talk about the farmers markets and the economy. So I was very happily surprised.
I love that.
What do you think? Do you expect that? Did you expect?
So one of the comments I hear a lot is, oh, all politicians are bad. You know, we do these sweeping comments, and I always have to, I've been doing this for 15 years now. You to meet a politician. I need you to come and see Joe Mahevic with me, or Taylor Backrack, or Nathan Cullen. I've had so many great interactions with politicians. They're human beings, for heaven's sakes. Sure, there's one or two bad apples, but that's kind of the human experience. It's not the politician experience. There's lots of great politicians out there, and they are interested, and they do want to make things better. That's why they got into this. So
yeah,
I guess I am surprised, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I went into it thinking they're going to tolerate me. That's how it's going to be. It's going to be me excited, and then these people in suits tolerating me. And it wasn't that at all. hey, we love this. I want to learn more. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. When you have more information, here's my email. Please give it to me. And I thought, wow, they didn't just tolerate me. Like, they're interested. They're fascinated, just like me. So that was incredible. And we have more of that coming. You know, once we get the full provincial report, the analysis is happening now. And we're going to do a big public release with the BC Association of Farmers Markets in early January.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that release and to seeing what we found out. And I hope that what we're going to see is across the province, politicians getting excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's food security, it's jobs creation, it's families. It's families taking care of themselves and others. And there's just so much to like about this, yeah, I think. Absolutely. So yeah. We all got to eat.
One of the things that was reinforced repeatedly is that things need to be much simpler. We were talking about this earlier, that our goal as anyone involved with farmers markets is just to feed people. There are so many things happening at markets right now that distract from that goal. And while most of those things are important, we need to be always aware of the importance of getting good quality food into everyone's hands. Did you ever rub up against this notion this summer that things are getting too complicated and we need to simplify? Well, let's take a specific item that I heard a couple of times. One of the questions that I had to ask everyone when I was writing up the market profile was, do you ever offer special events at the market? Are there ever things like the National Indigenous Peoples Day or a Pride Day? And often at the markets, they would take me aside and they would try and be very delicate about this because they do care about these things passionately, but they're a distraction. Whenever you bring politics into the mix in a farmer's market, things get complicated. And so they would say to me, you know what, if vendors want to put up a small pride flag at their stall to suggest that if you feel unsafe, you're safe at this stall, then we're all over that. Of course, we want to support that kind of thing. But to have a pride day means that we're just distracting from the fact that we need to be feeding people.
I think that a lot of markets don't have further capacity for those special events that would take a team of people to organize. So I don't know about the markets in your region. I have a very small team and it would be very hard to have holiday celebrations. I think we're very much no politics at our market. I don't get a lot of board support throughout the summer months because my board is small business vendors and they're too busy. And then when I'm really stretching myself thin, it's with our BCAFM programs that are really getting to the heart of what farmers markets do beyond sell vegetables. And that's the coupon program that you know so much about, as well as a new program that's just coming out this year called Hatch and Hype, which offers a business incubator space where new producers, farmers, anyone can come and have a free booth at the market with all this professional signage. And yeah, just get their toes wet for the first time and learn how to build a brand new business with no money up front, you know, nothing to sacrifice. Just come out, meet the customers, meet the vendors, and learn how to get started and build new businesses. So that's, if we're going to stretch ourselves thin or do too many things, they're going to be projects that are aimed towards our main goal of creating and building farmers market, right? Feeding people and selling farm products. So that's where our special programming is aimed towards, because that's what we specialize in.
Great. I think that's the best way to focus on it, because it's not like we're excluding anybody, but the focus is feeding people.
Yeah.
I want to go back from, did you call it Hatch and Hype?
That's the new program. So I don't know if it's coming to your area next year. They started, it was in some area last year and I didn't really hear about it. And this year they expanded to Vancouver Island and a few other small areas. So we said, yes, absolutely. And then I think 2024, they're expanding further. And we had about 10 to 15 brand new businesses come try out the market for the first time. And they had a free booth, beautiful tent, beautiful signage, gorgeous colors, everything free. There was no vendor fee, no membership fee. Yeah, and it's slowly happening all across BC. And that's really to, you know, it's home bakers. It's people, backyard growers. Like, I have my little garden bed. I could go be a vendor for the first time, and that would be exciting. Who else? Also, our current farmers can use the booth for new products. I had a friend at the market who does hot sauces and was creating a grown-up ketchup, like a spicy ketchup. And I was begging him, all year, come and be in my Hatch and Hype booth because I want to purchase your grown-up ketchup so bad. And he didn't have it ready yet. But those kinds of things, there's those novelty products, you can test them out. And every time that the customers come to the market, they can look for that booth and they can meet someone brand new or find a brand new product. So, you know, we're building industry, and through the coupon program, we're feeding the most vulnerable members of our community, the most nutritious food that, you know, is local, freshly picked. And that's the kind of work that we should be focused on.
We should totally be focused on that. The other thing that I think we need to draw attention to is, I think there's an assumption that once you start vending at a farmer's market, you're always going to vend at the farmer's market, right? But there's a lot of businesses, a lot of people go in with their cooking or their baking or they're an artisan, and they become so successful at the market that they move into a storefront and become a permanent business, and then they leave the market. And that's, hooray, that's a success story. But that means that there's a space open up at the market that we want filled. Well, of course,
absolutely.
Hatch and Hype.
Yeah, there's so many people. It's really intimidating to start a business. If you didn't grow up, you know, in an entrepreneurial household or a farming household, and you've never been part of a market, you wouldn't even know where to start. And you wouldn't know what kind of tables you need or how to market your products or how to design your labels or how to talk to people. And you can learn so many skills in just that one day of participation. And you don't have to invest very much of yourself to get there. And I think that's so valuable. And being an incubator and bringing all these skills, the skill exchange that happens at the market is so crucial, right? When you have the community come together, that education comes from one person to the next, and we all benefit from it.
My friend Leslie sells chickens and eggs. Those were her main products. And this year she had a couple of young fellas, quite young, who are homeschooled and they have chickens at home and they have started an egg business, and they come and sell off the side of Leslie's table and learn a few skills from her. And at the end of the summer, she said to me, those boys are really good vendors now, which is pretty neat.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that. The confidence that must have taught them, you know, the business skills.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
As a communicator, I'm guessing you'll be making presentations to government agencies and arms of local, provincial, and federal governments on a regular basis for the next few months.
I won't be doing presentations to provincial or federal government. I'll be creating the templates presentations for our organization to do outreach, and I'll be creating presentations for the individual markets to use to present to their local governments.
Ah.
And then on a regional level, I will be petitioning my local government. So I'll be using template presentations to hopefully grow farmers markets in my island area. That is my end goal. That's what I've been dreaming about for years. So I'm about halfway through those efforts now that I have data gathered. And I don't know what the future holds. It's hard to say. I feel like we're on the precipice right before this big study comes out. And, you know, you have to win the hearts of people and the minds of the community and the minds of government, and it's a big story.
But the fact that you're making a template and distributing it all across the province, that's very powerful, because that's a lot of voices that could potentially be heard.
That conversation can be had over and over and over in every city and every town to, you know, every councillor who will listen. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about farmers markets. And I think it's time to come into the new age. And markets have all sort of digitized over the past 5 years. You know, when I started in the industry, the markets didn't have websites. They didn't have email addresses. They closed early on random days, and you were never quite sure if they were going to be there. Not all the markets, but a lot of them. And over the past 5 or 6 years, everyone has gotten upgraded, and everyone is ready to sit at the table and say, we're not just having a random meetup. This is 50 businesses. This is 75 staff jobs happening every day. And we want you to understand what we're contributing to this community. And I think we're ready for that. I think it's important.
One thing I'd personally be really keen to speak to a government agency about is the coupons program, which we've alluded to several times. It's becoming absolutely essential for many people right now. There are so many vulnerable people out there. and it's becoming worse. And there are so many restrictions on this coupons program, and I'd love to have a conversation with somebody in the government to ease those restrictions so more people can be fed.
I've heard that multiple times from multiple people. I don't work on either side of that, so I can't really speak to it, but I know that you are not alone in those beliefs. There are a lot of people who want to see the restrictions lifted and see more people benefit from this program. I help run the program in my area, so I understand the impact is huge, and there's not a lot of government-funded programs that double their economic value the way that this program does, because every dollar of food is a dollar of food for somebody who needs that food, but it's also a dollar of income from the farmer. So it's an incredibly beneficial program for our province. And yeah, I agree.
I have one more question. That is that Dave Connell only collects these statistics about once every 6 years. It was a longer stretch this time because of COVID, but about once every six years. Would you apply for this job again if it came up?
I don't know. You know what? To tell you the truth, in 6 years, my AI assistant is going to do the job for me. So true story. That is exactly what will happen. I will sign a contract for, you know, 10% of the pay, and I will just operate this AI system that I pre-programmed to run for the summer and do all the scheduling and answer all the emails. So that is my prediction, that my position will be reduced by AI, but not completely redundant. So let's see where we are in 6 years and, you know, put some money on the table on this.
I'm not sure how AI could do the research associate job. I don't know if an AI would be keen to do all that traveling.
No, I think it would be terrifying to have a robot drive down the road to some market and start accosting visitors. So I think that position is probably safe. The research associate position worked because it was so human and so friendly with the stickers and the rainbow colors and the tactileness of being in person. So I feel like that position is safe.
It was a dream job. You'd get into the market and time would fly and you'd meet all these great people and you'd learn all these really neat things that you didn't expect to learn. It's just when you get home, it's like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Now I know why the farmers don't go out on Saturday night or on Thursday afternoon after, like, they're exhausted. That's hard work. But a highlight for the week, they wouldn't keep doing it if it wasn't so wonderful.
Yeah, I couldn't do it every day, that's for sure.
As a market manager, I'm sure you understand exactly what I'm saying.
I would hit 10,000 steps on the step counter by 9:30 in the morning. They're intense. Working in a market is intense. And then the farmers, they're up at 2 or 3 in the morning pulling fresh crops too. So it's a lot. It's a lot for everyone.
We had a vendor in Toronto at the Wychwood Barnes Market, and she was driving down from Lake Huron every day with fish. So that was a really long day. But, you know, she had lineups.
Wow. That's amazing.
We do take that for granted. And it was great to work with you, Kate.
Your stories kept my soul fed this summer, honestly.
Yeah, we did have some great stories, didn't we?
You learned so much about people. Our market participated in the assessment, and I was on autopilot because we had 400 people participate, and we had 2,600 customers come by. And I almost made Pamela Anderson do the survey. She came, I didn't recognize her. There's crowds of people, but as soon as I started talking to try to force her to answer the questions, and you could tell she was trying to sneak out without being recognized. And I finally stopped myself and was like, have a nice day. And you could tell she was really nice. She was really friendly, but she was there for other purposes. She was doing some research or enjoying herself. And we had funny stories like that from all over the province, though, really.
We live in a great province, right? This is such a great world we live in.
My favorite question to just go as a stranger to a market, if the person's not too busy, ask them how they got started. Every single person I ask that question of, I end up with like all the hair on the back of my neck sticking up. I've got the chills because I'm so touched by their life story. Like, it just goes out. Look around, see something interesting, walk up and ask them how they got started. And then just let the stories go, because every single person there has an interesting story to tell you.
And they're filling an interesting niche. They wouldn't be there if there weren't people buying their product. So they're filling a niche somehow. And I think it's building community. And it's fabulous. Yeah, approach a vendor.
That's it for the cookie jar this week. My guest today was Kate Poirier of the BC Association of Farmers Markets, connecting the dots on part 3 of The Knittedness of Community. The Cookie Jar is produced by Christine Bruce, with music by Elijah Larson, aired through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Available anytime at smithersradio.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. To follow the progress and know when these final reports will be available, visit their website at bcfarmersmarket.org. And if you want to know what's happening each week with us, you can find us on Facebook at The Cookie Jar on CICK.